This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to our little live pod, and welcome to our very, very special guest.
Hold on. Welcome to our live pod in association with Guinness here at the Bear Pub in Twickenham.
Hey, don't get me doing the intro if you're going to take over and alpha me. You're the one with the notebook. You do it.
Get it right.
Welcome, everybody.
This is better. To this Guinness live pod at the Bear Pub in Twickenham. Thank you all for turning up. We have a special guest with us. David, will you do the introduction?
Our special guest, everyone, is Brian Blessed, is Justin Harrison, 34 caps for the Wallabies. Famous for a few things. One, nicking the ball off the Lions at the end of the series, ruining everyone's lives from over here.
You're welcome.
Getting into a spat with Austin Healey and Austin calling him the plank. And he's called Justin Harrison, but we all call him Goog. And I think that's because in Australia, a bad egg is called a googie egg. And Goog, in his younger days, used to basically try and punch the chin off everything that moved. And he was regarded as a bad egg. Was that about right, Googie?
That's pretty close, yeah. Yeah, it's... And I have met someone that's called Googie Egg as well. And I thought, oh, mate, are you a bad egg as well? And he said, no, it's because I get laid all the time. So I thought, well, touche. Yeah.
Hi, everyone.
That's not why they called you it, mate.
I wasn't going to say, I wasn't going to pipe up.
Goodbye, Guinness is a sponsor.
Thank you all to come to my birthday party as well. It's my birthday day, so thank you.
Oh, yeah, it's Tommy's birthday.
Thank you. Not you. Thank you. That's how much, you know, that's how much I love you. That's how much I love the podcast. I'm working on my bloody birthday.
It is worth actually going on Instagram and looking at what some of Shanks has got some mates outside of rugby, which I always find weird. Like, he's got some Norms as mates. And
has he got any in rugby?
No, I haven't got any in rugby. Because the thing is, once you get to know him, he's difficult to spend a lot of time with in sort of anything but sort of short periods. But he's got these mates from Wales. And they've posted some really nice pictures of Shanks on his birthday from over the years, looking just awful. And it's one of those things, like this morning in bed, we shared a room last night, we often do. There's a cock up with our booking, but we're very happy with that. And Shanks showed me these pictures and he was like, look how terrible this one is and this one and this one. And I had to say, mate, that is just what you look like. That's what you look like now. That's what you look like every day, mate.
There is actually a photo of me with a mullet, believe it or not, which... You know, if I could grow any hair whatsoever, it would be a mullet again. But it's a ginger rug on my head. It looks absolutely... That one does look terrible, but...
That's properly
but
bad.
But we've all read the book, The Ugly Duckling. Now look at me, all right? I'm a swan.
Visual jokes always work well.
Good.
People can't see it. <anyway. laughs>
Oh, look at
Everyone's
this.
Everyone's like, what? Yeah, okay.
What have you been up to this week? Busy week for you?
I've been very busy, yes. Prostituting myself around to the various rugby lunches. And
glad there was an end to that one.
It's been hard. Oh, look, you know, it's always a special week. England, Australia. I mean, every test match is important at Twickenham, but certainly Australia, England have a certain history, given that we're sort of the convict history, and you guys have claim to, well, not you, English claim to have invented the game. So there's always that. But it's an important week for Australia, obviously, given that we're under pressure and we've got a team that's trying to rediscover how to win. You know, and England are starting to do that. They played well against New Zealand. They're indifferent against Japan, but they did enough to win, and they're looking to clearly finish this spring series with a convincing win at Twickenham, which is a pretty boring answer. But
right, let's get back off the rugby. Should we good? Yeah. You know, mate. You actually look in, when I say quite good shape, I don't mean like you're working out, clearly not. But I think you look in pretty good shape considering I know what you were doing yesterday and last night. So you want to tell us a little bit about that? Because you were at the East India Club, weren't you?
I was at the East India Club, yes. Yeah, my shape's pretty good. I'm doing quite a good impersonation of Pregnant Snake. I'm just a stretched out version of an unfit person, really.
Yeah. You've got so much more room to hide it, though, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I soon discover it when I look down. But yesterday was interesting. East India Club, full of the toffee noses of English rugby. It was a very good experience. One that was gladly over pretty quickly for them. And last night, I found myself at Notting Hill at a little restaurant, enjoying some English hospitality for a little while.
Who were you with? Did you meet up with any ex-players?
I met up with little George Gregan.
Yeah.
Who looks 21 years old still.
Amazing. Amazing.
And just quickly, you know, we'll go there just very quickly. So, you know, the team dichotomy, you know, we talk about senior test caps, kind of works out where you sit on the bus, that sort of thing. You get respect, and the further back up the bus, probably the more senior you are, those sorts of things. First blokes to eat, all that. So George Gregan, one of the things about George Gregan that I learned very quickly is to never be caught in the shower block at the same time with him.
Yeah.
It was very intimidating. For a small bloke, very intimidating. Just don't do it. Very good player. Very fine athlete across the park. So,
yeah.
But, and a good bloke.
The thing,
well,
we don't want to go into too much detail about George Gregan naked, but the thing I've noticed is that when you're in the shower with George, it's like you're in the shower with George and he's got an identical twin doing a handstand in front of him.
That is a visual we can go to.
It is what you might call advanced weaponry.
Well, I'll give you, and we'll finish quickly with this theme. We probably should get off it before we get arrested, but... So players, all, you know, you get a piece of each other in the shower, but I'll give you one story quickly. You know, definitely the worst place I've ever played in my life was a place called Hoik, which feels like exactly what it sounds like, a big phlegm ball. We played against the Border Rivers on the Brumbies Development Tour, which was the first professional tour for Eddie Jones, that little half-baked coach that you blokes have got at the moment, and women. I've got, and so Tapper Henning is refereeing the game. If you don't remember who Tapper Henning is, he's the world's greatest cheating referee known to man. And we're playing this game, and it was basically an 80-minute fight in mud, and we all finished the game. I finished it with trench foot. It was just such a shithole. And during the game, I'm into him. You've lost control. This is shit. You've lost control, mate. Get control. And he's like, okay, well, you have 10 minutes to think about the control. Piss off. I was like, okay, back into him. You lost control. So we're having a shower afterwards, myself and a bloke called Rod Kafer, who I always felt pretty good about having a shower at the same time with. So you've always got one that you target to head into.
Yeah. Dream buddy.
I'm feeling pretty confident.
Duncan Bell.
Yeah, Belly.
Yeah.
Measy. So then Tapper Henning rolls in with his towel and says, oh, do you mind if I have a shower with you? He spent a bit of time in Australia, so he's got a bit of an Australian accent.
What part of Denmark was he from?
He went through India. And, no worries, mate. Work, crack on. So he drops his towel, and straight away you knew that there was something wrong. There was a fourth person in the room, and he walks past me, and I'm like, don't look, I have to look, and I'm just going to look. So he walks past me slowly like John Wayne, and turns around at his shower cubicle, and Cave's there, like, way out of the picture. I'm thinking, I'm done here. He's smoking me. And he looks at me and says, who's in control now, eh? So, you. So that was new respect for a referee.
So. While we're on the subject, should we get off this subject?
Yes,
now?
Get off it. Yeah, let's talk about Eddie Jones, okay? Because we had Justin Marshall a couple of weeks ago, yep. And he gave us a lovely story about Eddie Jones and the Champ saga. Have you spent much time with him? What's he like? To me, he looks like he really needs to shave his head at some stage.
He needs to bite the bullet, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's still clinging on.
Like geography teacher fuzz going on.
Yeah. He'd be checking the weather report every day. Blokes with wispy Devon hate a drizzle.
Yeah.
You would know that when you were losing yours. You're like, ah.
Completely.
A little bit of moisture is really going to expose my Devon patch at the moment.
JP Roberts hates it at the moment.
It's like when you tell your infant child not to touch something hot, but they just can't help it. Like Eddie Jones is kind of like that. He's like, you don't want to spend much time with him, but you do enjoy the small parts of time that he gives you some motivation and probably mixed in with a lot of abuse, which kind of gets a result from most players. Some guys react to it well. He's very good at pushing the button and finding out what's going to make you work harder for him. Whether it be talking, and quite often you'll have a conversation with him for about 7 minutes. He'll know everything about you and you'll come away knowing nothing about him. And you'll be like
Hannibal Lecter in a way.
He's very, very, very good at that mental preparation and finding out what makes blokes motivated.
I think it was yesterday or the day before, 15 years ago, England might have won the World Cup. I can't honestly remember. Eddie Jones was coach.
15 years, 4 days. Yep.
You were playing in that game. What are your memories? Do you remember it?
Well, I do now that English Rugby tweeted a footage of old mate Johnny knocking it over on his right foot, and I'm the bonehead trying to charge the kick down that can't get there in time. And I'm also the bonehead that missed the tackle on Matt Dawson at one, which made
me... Oh, are you?
Yeah, that's me.
Famous for something.
He's very powerful after an hour and a half.
You're welcome. But so Eddie Jones.
Your arms are 5 feet long each. How'd you miss him?
I was never able to tackle. Just people just tripped over me.
Just quickly, your quads look massive in that as well when you're charging down that.
Yeah.
Kick. Very impressed.
I never missed legs day. No. Ever. Tuesday was my leg day
quad
special.
Quad father.
So Eddie Jones, on that tour of the Brumbies development tour, so back when we used to have fun playing rugby and you're allowed to have something other than a cappuccino, we'd have court sessions. And everyone had nicknames in the court. And so Eddie's was, and he'll be very pleased that I'm bringing this up, he was Tattoo from Fantasy Island. Anyone ever watch Fantasy Island? You know, the little kid that used to run in and go, the plan, boss, the plan. So we'd do a court session and every time he wanted to say something, he would have to start with de plan, boss, de plan. And I was judge. And so we're sort of week two of this tour, and we've had a few court sessions and a bit of a crack at it. And he worked out if he didn't say anything, he wouldn't have to say de plan. So then every minute and a half as judge, I'd ask him a question, which he had to answer yes or no to, but he definitely had to say de plan, boss, beforehand. So... But that lasted for one tour, and then he turned into the national freak that he is, and no one speaks about it ever again.
That's it. The first time I met Eddie Jones was on a plane down from Newcastle watching a Premiership game, and he'd just got the England job. And he's like, oh, go on, you've got
just
some
quickly, space. You're talking about tattoos. So
why is everything just quickly with you?
That's knick-knack. Just quickly. So people know, so that's knick-knack from The Man with the Golden Gun. Yeah, I didn't know that, but there we are.
That is interruption overruled.
Sorry, I didn't know who it was, but people might want to know.
Oh, yeah. He looks like me. Oh,
I got him now.
No, he looks like me, is he? Didn't he? He's like a little... he's a funny little one like me, is he?
There he is.
Shanks, what's his name? It's Emil or Herve something, isn't it? Have a look on his actual real name. It's
Eddie
Herve
Jones.
Something, because I used to call Mirzy Herve. I'm
Nick-knack
sure
it was.
Tattoo. Eddie Jones.
Nick-knack it was in James Bond. And I went to an evening with Roger Moore before. And
excuse me? Yeah. With a what?
Now you're lying.
Sir Roger Moore. And he said that...
Poor Roger.
Nick-knack was the dirtiest bloke he's ever met.
No way.
Just a bit of insight for you, because that's what you get. Is when that a grand pods?
That's the shittest story known to me.
Carry on.
And then the bus left.
Carry on.
Nah, forget it, mate. You ruined it.
All right, fine. Oh, come on, Dave.
I've actually forgotten.
All right.
He goes, I can't remember. I was talking about Eddie Jones, wasn't I? Meeting Eddie Jones. Yeah, I was on the plane. He walks past. He goes, "Hello, mate. How are you?" I said, "I'm good. I'm flat. I know who you are. You're a mate of Borthers, aren't you?" Yeah. He goes, "You're the funny one." Well, you think you're funny. I don't. And just kept walking. That was it. It was a plane packed full of rugby fans and like the and whatever team it was, Sarries, whatever, were flying back on the same plane. I think all the refs on it. Everyone's on it.
Sit down.
He's like, "I don't," and just walks. So anyway, I never liked him. So. I like him now.
So Eddie Jones, sort of guy that this bloke, he could bring grown men to tears, right? And, you know, there's two scenarios. You either do your fence up incorrectly, start crying instantly, or you speak to Eddie Jones in a one-on-one after a test match. So Matt Dunning, who's the world's fattest prop ever to lace a professional rugby boot, besides Ollie LaRue and you.
Yeah.
So we're doing the gym thing. I'm in the squat rack. And Matt Dunning goes in for his one-on-one. And then poof, we're up against the wall because we know it's going to be pretty special. And all we hear is quiet. "Yeah, fucking hell. You're not going to fucking cry again, are you?" And so then he goes, "Stand up." And we're all shit, footsteps, door. He frog marches Matt Dunning out to the gym where the mirror is, puts him in front of the mirror. "Stand in front of that. Lift your shirt up. Lift it up." And we're like, "Oh, what's going on?" Bottom lip going, bit of a tear. Lifts his shirt up and Beaver goes, I can swear, can't I? "What the fuck is that? You expect me to fucking play you to play in my team with that shit? Have a look at that." And then walks away. And like, Tucky's like that. And just leaves him standing there with his shirt up. So, great bloke.
He was fast. Matt Dunning was fast though, wasn't he? When he got ball in hand, he could run pretty quick as well.
He was pretty quick.
Oh, the bacon sarnies are coming out, guys, by the way. Just another visual.
What about you? What about court sessions that you remember? Were you anyone dressed up?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, as we're going on, dear listeners, yeah, carry on with the. We'll have a couple of bacon sarnies up here, actually. You just don't want to be rude to our guests, but can we go first? Thank you.
I couldn't eat anything
thank
either.
Thank you, my lady.
Thank you.
Court sessions, I mean, the most humiliating I ever had was, I mean, my first, again, you couldn't do this stuff these days. My first one at Sarries in 98 was, Andy Lee was our fly half, does the sporting class hospitality stuff now. Flea was our fly half, and as well as Alain Penault or Thierry Lacroix, I can't remember, we had about 10 fly halves in about 3 years there. But Flea was there, and I was too noisy for him after a few beers, didn't like it. So he just said, "Right, just take all your clothes off and do the rest of the court naked." And that's like a punishment, unless you're a bit overweight and always too hot. That was like a treat for me. I was like, "Thank you very much. I will do that. I'll gladly do that." But the next year, we went on a team trip to Derby, team building trip to Derbyshire, and did like making rafts and stuff, all the unoriginal stuff that was original 20 years ago. And I remember a couple of things. One was that we went up on the coach, on the team coach, but Francois Pienaar drove his massive S-Class Merc that all the Premiership captains got. That's a separate story, right? I'll get there, though. It's not a long story. Basically, Tony Diprose was our captain for years at Sarries, like 10 years, never missed a game hardly. And then one day, Francois just takes the captaincy off him. Francois's like head coach, chief exec, you know, director of rugby, chef, bus driver, everything at Sarries. And then he makes himself captain as well. And we're like, why has he made himself captain? He's given himself more work. We're a good team. Dippy's a really good captain. And then 2 weeks later, it was announced that all the Premiership rugby captains were getting brand new Mercedes S-Classes. So that's like, Frankie rocks up in this massive car. Cheers, boy. Anyway, privilege. So he has to leave this camp early. So he drives up and takes a couple of lads with him, takes Julian White with him in the car. And he gets there and he's just getting used to this new car. And he's about to reverse into a parking space. And our coach parks in this place in Derbyshire. We're all pissed. We've been on the piss all the way up on the bus. And the lads are pissed in Frankie's car, but he's obviously driving, so he's not. And Julian's like, there's a car behind you, Frankie. He's like, don't worry, Julian. It's a Mercedes-Benz. It has sensors. And the sensors smash him straight into this car, and he's realised it's not moving, so he puts his foot down and basically drags a Fiat Uno across a car park in front of all the lads and ruined his Merc. It was great. Anyway, on that trip, all the young lads were stood up and made to bolt pints with eggs in them. And it was like, right, bolt a pint. And I hate bolting pints. Like, some people love it. I hate it. Bolt a pint. And I was like, oh, and they're like, no, not quick enough. And forgot to put an egg in it. So do another one. And it's like, okay, another one. I was like, right, I'm going to spew now. And this actually isn't, I was having a really nice time until now. And Rob Thelby spewing everywhere. Francois Pienaar ended up getting fined for crashing his car, and he spewed out. Everyone's spewing. It's like, this is shit. Like, this is not fun. We all just feel ill. We've got to be up at 5 running. So it's like, we got back and had a debrief, and our little group, in our group, they said we didn't like being forced to drink and do all this stuff. We wanted to have a good time, not just spew everywhere. So I was the spokesperson for our group, being the youngest and the gobbiest. So I stood up and said, didn't enjoy the forced drinking, that sort of stuff. Don't need that. We're all grown-ups. That was pre-season. The lads waited a year until the end of season court, and Brendan Reedy, the Samoan prop, the chief, he was like, Fletz, remember you complained about the forced drinking? Well, you're not drinking today, bro. It's like the biggest drinking day of the year, Silly Sunday. You're driving everyone. Every year they need to go, bro. So the whole day I was driving everyone. And every time someone downed a pint, there was this bucket, a spare bucket full of ice and massive jumbo bottles of Diet Coke. So every time somebody necked a pint, I had to neck a pint of ice cold Diet Coke. I tell you what, I would rather have done red wine. It was horrendous, absolutely horrendous. I was so, so sick all day. And we got to about midnight and I was still ferrying people around. Hadn't had a drop of alcohol and I was spewing. I was driving George Shooter's car. I was spewing in George's car as I was driving pissed lads to the nightclub sober. It was awful.
I think it was a year after when we were there, and we had to, it was another fancy dress, but you probably had the best fancy dress I've ever seen. You shaved your head with a Bic, and we had to duct tape a long bit of a
black Loctite.
A big black ponytail down your back. You were one of the guys from Kickbox, was it?
I was Tong Po.
Tong Po from Kickbox.
Anyone
amazing.
Seen Kickboxer? Remember Tong Po?
He's got a shaved head. He's got four bits of duct tape across the back of his head and this long ponytail coming down the back, and he's pulled it off really well. But
you've
we had
got
to
the
bring,
picture somewhere.
We had to bring a root vegetable. For some reason, we had to bring a root vegetable, and I spent ages looking around for the biggest thing I could find, right? And I found this massive marrow, right? It was huge. And I brought it along with two hands like that. And we got there and started drinking and stuff. But the rule was that throughout the whole day and throughout the whole drinking session, you had to eat your root vegetable. Oh, it killed me. I had this massive thing like this. But I did it. But one of the other court sessions, we in Australia in the 2003 World Cup, right? Wales came really close. Should have beaten England in the semi-final. But we had a big court session after, and a load of the boys got dressed up. But I had to dress as a sloth, believe it or not, from the Goonies.
Why? So don't go why.
I'm
why?
Not
don't
sure.
Get it.
So they gave me a T-shirt, a Superman T-shirt. They gave me a little pirate hat and a little sword. And every time I wanted to speak, I had to say, hey, you guys. But luckily, the name didn't stick, all right?
I remember going to Christmas party, and I've claimed this to myself, but every time I say it, I wonder if I'm misremembering it and it was actually you, Shanks. But we had to go to our Christmas party at Sarri's, and it was great because some of the older lads were all married off and whatever. There was about 20 of us young lads that were all single, and we used to just get a load of extra tickets printed off in the same color as the official tickets, go to Eros nightclub in Enfield and just hand them out to girls. Come along A £5 entry, and there'll be 30 girls that no one's ever met turning up from Eros nightclub to the clubhouse at Bramley Road at Sarri's. It was like, all the wives were like, who are these people? Like, I don't know, who invited them? Like, who invited them? Come on in. Go on, it was genius. But we had to go as a nation of the world. You just had to go as a nation. And I remember going in, going slightly better nick in those days, but not much, going in a G-string and a pair of flip-flops, and I went as Thong Kong. Remember that? That was it. That was all I wore. And all the players' wives are there. Nigel Ray, the owner, is there with his wife. I remember, I know we're not, you're allowed to swear good, but Michelle doesn't like us swearing. But I remember him, Nigel Ray, the Sarri's owner, saying to me, you really are a wanker, aren't you, David? So I think I might be, yeah. Anyway, I'm off to Bath. Cheers.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Right, we have to touch on Austin Healey, okay? Because you've had a massive spat with him over the years. You know, one would think you're probably all right mates, close up.
No.
All right, fair enough, yeah. I mean, I try to give you an out there. Well done for taking it. But what actually went on?
Well, it was just one spat, not over the years. It's just one event. When I single-handedly beat the British and Irish Lions.
Yep.
You're welcome. And he was on a flight home at the time. Like, apparently, so it's not a hard equation, is it? He's the smallest bloke on the field, and so I pick on those ones. And then also, none of his teammates are going to help him out. So it was pretty easy. But he's just an annoying little bloke that wouldn't go away, and he played Australia A, played British and Irish Lions, and we beat the British and Irish Lions for the first time on that tour in 01, so it gave Australia a bit of energy. But it all kicked off when, so kick back in play, Austin Healey slides into a ruck with knees into Graham Bond's back, and I see that, I blow up, grab him, you're a little such and such, don't do it again, whack whack. And then Brumbies v British and Irish Lions. He scores an intercept try and is carrying on. So, like, red mist Harrison rolls in, grab him again. And then third test, I get selected to play my first test, you know, in Sydney. We have a good match. And then I wake up on the day of the game, and apparently he's written some fucking article about me here, calling me a plod plank and an ape. And I didn't know anything about it because everyone was like, oh, he's motivated you. I said, man, I don't read the paper. I was too busy shitting myself about the test that was about to happen. And the only time I knew about it was so in the morning I woke up, and which is what you do.
Often.
You know, to live. And yeah. I walk out of the hotel, my room, to go to breakfast, and there's a big bunch of bananas on the floor. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, that's test day procedure for Australia. I've never done it before, but no problem. So I pick up this hand of bananas, and which is more than one banana. And I'm walking down to breakfast, eating one of these bananas, and Griggs, Todai Kefu, Joe Roth are in the breakfast hall, and I walk in eating a banana, holding the others, and they start laughing their heads off. You mate, you're such a dick. And I'm like, what? And then, so they had the newspaper spread out on the breakfast table with Healy's headline, ape, you're an ape, plod and fucking plank. And Roffey had put bananas at my door to have me walk in looking like an ape eating a banana. And that's the morning of the test. So thanks a lot. I mean,
sloth than ape. But.
So then, the rest is history. They build statues about it. And they talk about it in Australian sporting history, what I did that night.
Some of the toughest opponents you've played against. Give us a little bit of an insight into some of the battles.
There's various reasons. You know, you knew about angry, hard blokes that were good fighters. You knew about good defenders. You knew about, you know, second rowers that were cerebrally very good. So there's a various reasons for different people being hard, but I suppose...
Well, hang on a sec, Goog. 2 seconds, pause. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Shanks. Happy birthday to you. Oh, 3 cheers for Shanks. Hip hip.
Hey.
Hip hip. Hip hip.
Hey. Is that a big turd? I don't
know. Well done, Michelle. Michelle's organised a cake.
Thank you, everybody. I thought you forgot. I was a little bit disappointed, but...
Do you know the saddest thing? Like, I remember...
Is it Colin Caterpillar from M&S?
Corey.
Oh, right. Oh, no problem.
It's a bird. It's a bird. Oh, no.
It's a gender-neutral caterpillar. I love that. Oh.
It's Joe. Oh, could be either. Is there an E? We don't know, actually.
Oh, thank you, guys. I know you all chipped in. Thank you very much.
Do you know, like, I've got a couple of really horrible memories from my childhood. We'll get back to your story now, Googie. But one of them is when I went to see my mum. I was staying with my parents or whatever, and I was a kid, so of course staying with my parents. And with my mum for having breakfast, and about an hour in, she's like, do you know what today is? And I was like, Saturday? She's like, it's my birthday. I was like, oh no, she's had to tell me, and I forgot. Shanks did that this morning in the hotel room. It's my birthday today, mate. Oh, it was so sad, because I didn't remember, / didn't give a shit.
I just want to save the embarrassment of looking at social media and seeing all the posts I've had from, like, Tim Horan and Tom James and Mike Phillips, you know.
Barack Obama. Yeah. Yeah, Nigel Farage. We went to the same school.
Austin.
Goog, toughest opponents. Right, happy birthday, Tom. Well done. You're still alive.
Oh, so. Toughest opponents. There's all sorts of different ones. But I think my dad was probably my toughest opponent. He was my worst enemy most of the time. You talk about sledging. So Australian, we're pretty good at sledging, or we used to be when you're allowed to. And probably my upbringing was, you know, I was brought up in the Northern Territory. Didn't play rugby till I was 19, all that sort of stuff. So I'm, you know, pretty good. but my dad used to call me Cinderella. And I'm like, I didn't have the courage to ask why. So it just went on for a while. And then I finally plucked up the courage to ask him, why do you call me Cinderella? And he said, because you're always running away from the fucking ball. Well, thanks. Thanks a lot, wanker. So my dad, I'll just give you another insight. So, and there's two stories to my dad. So we're walking along on a camping trip, father-son camping trip. We're going to go fishing, do some stuff, you know, make fire, roar. He's walking along in front of me, and there's a whole heap of flies on his back. We're in the Northern Territory, a lot of them up there. And I just do that, just to brush the flies off his back, right? And I'm cutting shapes along behind him and thinking nothing of it. And I do that, and then I just, this hand, cross, nip, eye. Oh, what was that for? And he said, mate, I'd rather I'm on my back than my fucking face. Because when I brushed all the flies, they all went zzz, zzz, and all flew around his face. So I learned a very valuable lesson there. If you see someone with flies on their back, don't fucking do that and think you're doing them a favour, especially when it's your dad and he's got a hand twice the size of this. And the second part of this, I'm very fond of my father, as you can tell.
Yeah.
So birthday presents. What's the shittest birthday present you think you've ever been given?
That cake.
A cake that looks like a shit. I'll give you an indication of my father. So at my 13th birthday, he gave me a dictionary as his present to me. I swear to God, it was an Oxford Concise Dictionary, big one that I couldn't even carry around or anything. And in it, he'd written, in the interests of a well-rounded sentence, Dad. That was it. I swear to God, I'm like, surely there's a secret compartment with a set of keys in here or a remote control car somewhere or something. That Oxford Concise Dictionary. There you go, son. Welcome to teenagedom, 13 years old.
Jesus.
Were you a planned birth, do you think, or not? Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, I like it. I like presents I get from my kids if they make it. I like presents that they make because then I know it hasn't cost me anything.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
But your father sounds like a great bloke. What country was he former dictator of?
He's in prison.
But Australia, obviously, in town now, and we've all got some fond memories of Australia. I remember going out on tour to Australia in 2003, and Wendell Saylor was on the wing with Lottie Dekeery, and Wendell Saylor ends up scoring a try, which I don't know if it's ever been done before, in his own dead ball line. Manages to run the length of the field and score against Wales, and Marlon Williams gets a tap on the back for not allowing him to score into the post.
Oh yeah, all the way back. What a nugget.
And then we had Lottie Dekeery was on the wing, and he'd just come from rugby league, so the plan was to put it on Lottie Dekeery on kickoffs because he's from rugby league, he can't catch, so we put it straight on him, and he managed to run the ball up to the halfway line, so we didn't do that again. But obviously Wales beat them last week, 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, yeah.
Where are Australia right now?
9-6.
Where, that epic tri-fest. Where are they right now?
Are they in a good place?
Probably in the hotel.
The hotel down the road, mate.
Twickenham this afternoon.
Yeah.
Double boosh. Look, Australia are playing like a team terrified of losing again. You know, and the game against Italy was evidence of that. You know, they were always going to win, but they didn't want to lose. So they played a pretty boring game and just knocked out a victory. England are on their way back and rediscovering winning form. Australia need to work out who their best 30 players are heading into a World Cup period. So this is probably our last decent test without the World Cup just around the corner. We've only got two domestic tests next year, Argentina and New Zealand, and then World Cup. So this test is very important for the structure of the squad and a lot of things that are going to permeate through to June and the start of the World Cup next year. So that can be distracting, but there's evidence of that happening in the team selection. Matt Tamua at 10. We need to find out who our best 10 is. Bernard Foley probably isn't going to be the best 10 for the World Cup, but he needs to be in the squad somewhere. So we need to see what he's going to be like at 12, because that'll give him a place in that 30-man squad.
And he's got a great moustache, just like Bruce over there.
Good moustache.
Spawn it. Well done, you.
Dirk
Diggler. Excellent, that. Well, that's proper Murphy, that.
There's a bit unsettled this week, isn't it, because of Adam Ashley Cooper and Kirtley Beale being axed from the squad for inviting girls back to their hotel room.
Well, it's his sister-in-law and her friends, for a start. So
really?
Yeah.
Keep it close.
So it's not... It's actually inviting back.
He's not Tasmanian. But
girls that they know. So it's not. This is not out on the pool. Everyone's smashed.
No.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought was, what were the double dirties doing? These two blokes are starting members of the team. Where are the reserves?
Yeah, I know.
They're probably still out. Look, it's a storm in a teacup scenario. English media like to beat things up, but there's probably not good that is an indication that a senior playing group have put an archaic rule in place and made it feel like a schoolboy tour. Yeah.
Flass is eating.
I can't talk now.
But it was a senior committee decision, though, wasn't it? They've obviously set rules, and they've sort of said, you know, these are rules. If you break them, you're out. They've broken them. They knew the rules.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, as a past player, you know, there was nothing worse when you're in a team environment having people offer opinions from outside a group. So I don't really know. You know, we don't really know the seriousness of it. Clearly, something went wrong. And it's been sanctioned, and I think that...
Oh, let's speculate. They're deviants, the pair of them.
Do you think a big loss, losing those two? I mean, I suppose Beale's not been on the greatest of form.
No, well, Beale's a bit too individual at the moment for the Australian play. We need to play as a team. You know, it's a boring rhetoric, but, you know, it's team performance that'll get you through test matches, and Beale was trying to find too many solutions by himself, which I don't know, I'll draw a segue into... The Danny Cipriani debate at the moment. Draw one. Yeah, it's Beale there, and then I'm going into Cipriani here, and then I'm going to bring it back around to Beale.
It's a penis, all right?
Boobies.
You know, the easy answer to why Danny Cipriani's not in the English squad, I think, he's not the best 10 in the country. He might be the best 10 for Gloucester, but he's not the best 10 for England at the moment. So I don't know why everyone keeps banging on about, hey, he's got to be in the team. Why has he got to be in the team? Owen Farrell's better than him. Simple as that. And Danny Cipriani, in the test against South Africa, when they won, did one thing for the team right at the end, put the kick through for someone else to score the try. Up until then, he'd been doing everything for himself. So he's too individual, which is, and now I'm coming back around, pay attention.
Here we go.
Like Beale. So Beale puts the team under too much pressure because he's trying to find solutions by himself. He's an amazing athlete, Danny Cipriani, great player as well. But in terms of the context of what's required for both groups of players at the moment, they don't fit into that immediate game plan.
Pocock's not fit. That's going to be a big loss, surely.
What, is he playing?
No.
Oh, he's out, is he?
Yeah, I think so. I believe so. Is anyone? Yeah, got a few, thank God.
Okay.
I was dreaming then.
Yeah, I wasn't convinced that playing two open sides model was working for us. We did it In fact, we did it in the World Cup in 03, so clearly it didn't work then either. George Smith, Phil Waugh started, David Lyons at number eight. So it's not a revelation. But I think for a while now, Michael Hooper's been unsure of his role in that dichotomy of, you know, on ball or off ball. Does he organise defence? Does he link with backs? He was trying to find his place. And as a result, his captaincy has suffered as well. He's been a confused captain because he's confused about his role in the team when Pocock's on the field. So I think it's probably a positive. We get to expose another back rower to test rugby. And we get to find out if we've got another player who can get into the World Cup squad.
I keep watching Australia and wondering where Sean McMahon is, because it is Sean McMahon, isn't it? I always know the surnames, but
the wrestler,
McMahon, the back. No, Sean McMahon's the wrestler. No. McMahon, the back rower.
Yeah, he's in Japan.
He's earning
a million yen a minute.
Ah, that's why he's there. Yeah, I always thought. Well, I know he's not the most. He's sort of a bit like Tim Arne Harrison, but at least he's tough to defend and he carries some ball and he's aggressive and he's abrasive and he's all elbows. I wonder if they're great over the ball, but they need a bit of that.
That's the problem that Australia's got. Australia every year has probably 300 test caps walk offshore to somewhere else. So we lose a big chunk of our IP and we've got to try and rebuild it again. Mm. You know, rugby now, players still aren't paid enough for what they do, I think. You were certainly paid too much when you were playing.
Oh, God. Here we go.
It's amazing that you were paid at all for the shit you used to do.
No, he played in Wales. They didn't get paid over there. Still don't.
In sheep and a dental plan.
Give him free shell suits and trainers and do anything you want.
We shag them, you eat them.
A free complimentary course in hot wiring Ford Fiestas. Anyway, don't be too generalising. Anyway.
But, we have a player drain going on that happens every year, so it's a difficult squad to keep together. And, yeah, we've got possibly some better players playing elsewhere in the world that we'd love to see in a Wallaby jersey. The demographic of our team has changed as well. You know, it's clear to see that the people populating the jersey now are coming from different pathways to what they traditionally came from. So that in itself has a redesign necessity. Intellectually, Australia have always been pretty powerful on the field. We've never been the best athletes, except for a few blokes.
Yep.
But we've always been intellectually very good at making good decisions under pressure, and that Australian team at the moment doesn't do that. So when they start to understand how to do that in the last 10 minutes of matches, we'll start seeing some better performances.
You didn't have teacup though, did you, like England in the World Cup? You know, that's how they won it. Think clearly under pressure. Clive Woodward.
Teacup?
Apparently so, yeah.
What's teacup?
Just said it. Think clearly under pressure.
Oh, it's an acronym.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Obviously the last... The last,
you send that
a golden age of broadcasting. gents.
I was trying to say it quickly and move on. All right,
hang on, before you move on, then, Tommy, before you move on, Kirtley Beall, I think I played in his debut for Australia A. I think it was his first game because we'd never heard of him, and it was 2010, and we can't remember where we played, but it was on the coast somewhere, and we did our pre-match meal and little warm-up stuff and mental rehearsals in this bizarre, like, Phoenix club, working man's club from the 70s, wherever it was. Anyway, Kirtley Beall played wherever he played, 10 or 12 or fullback or whatever, and he got the ball after about 10 minutes, and he was one-on-one with me and obviously shat himself and found an extra yard of pace. Anyway, he went round me so easily, straight through the middle and scored, and it was actually quite embarrassing, and that was when I... Genuinely, that was after the game. Graham Rowntree and I, was the coach, had a bit of a chat, and he was just like, "How'd you feel out there?" I was like, "Mate, I just can't move quick enough anymore." And he's like, "Yep, correct. You can't move laterally, forward and back anywhere." And he danced around me on the way back. Kirtley Beall, as he scored his try, ran back, and he was just laughing. And I think he said something to me like, "Are you for real, mate? Are you for real?" And he was laughing. He looked at someone else and goes, "Is this guy for real?" And I didn't know. I thought, you know, you don't quite know what's going on. It was so awkward. I sort of joined in the joke and I was like, oh, shit, you mean I'm terrible? That's what you mean. And all the lads thought it was amazing. And one of the lads who thought it was really amazing was Lee Mears, the pygmy we had on a couple of weeks ago. And then we played against Aussie A the next week. And they had this, we targeted one of their players, one of their new players, because he was tiny. And when they said, our coach said he's a midget, he's a little midget. And he's quick, but he's a midget. And we said, what, like Mearsy small? And they were like, smaller than Mearsy. Like, no way. There are kids who are bigger than him. So, and it turned out this nobody that we were going to target was called James O'Connor. Anyway, he scored a hat-trick. It took him off at half-time. He went round Mearsy like Mearsy wasn't there, and basically ended both of our careers that week. It was brilliant.
We had that was when Steve Hansen, he coached Wales for a small period, right? And we're playing in New Zealand at Hamilton, right? And Steve Hansen said, we're going to beat New Zealand this week. 100%. I have faith in the Welsh team. We're going to beat New Zealand. And I automatically thought, if there's a chance we're going to beat New Zealand in the last 50 years, it's probably going to be at home in Wales. But I'll go with you in Hamilton. And he said, there's a new cap at 12. And we went through the team sheet. And it was Muli Aina at 15. I think it was Rico Gear at 14. Tana Umanga at 13, new cap at 12. That's who we're going to target. That's the chink in the armour. We'll target him all day. Up to number 12, Daniel Carter. Okay, first cap in Hamilton. And he went on to score individually 22 points that day and actually hammered Wales. But I just think, you know, had it not been for Wales, he probably wouldn't have been the player that he was.
It's a good point,
today.
Actually.
And, you know, I'm sure that's going to come out in his book. But if we look at the last five results, okay, against... against England, you guys, you lost the fight, lost five on the bounce, but obviously you had that 2015 win. There has to be a certain amount of confidence going into today's game from Australia, surely.
Only because of what's been happening to England over the last little while since the Six Nations, you know, and they've been indifferent in their performance. I don't ever like to be honest about things, but Australia don't have as powerful a squad as England do today. You know, England bench has got something like 530 caps coming onto the field. You know, finishes and all that teacup shit. But
I didn't make it up.
But I just think across the board, England know themselves better than Australia do at the moment, and they'll just be too powerful. Unfortunately for us, a good result would be a close Test match. That gives us an idea about 10, 12, 13 combination and whether Israel Folau can do something for the team instead of just catching high balls and trying to offload under pressure. Those sorts of things are what we'll be interested in. Will Genia is playing his 100th today, so he'll be distracted. But, you know, there's all sorts of different emotional things. The Indigenous jersey's coming out again now, so there's all this sort of backdrop of emotional energy that could either contribute to a galvanising performance or it'll separate them again, and particularly this Adam Ashley Cooper Kirtley Beale scenario. So Adam Ashley Cooper, a veteran brought back into the squad for IP, knowledge, leadership, those sorts of things. So even though it's an innocuous event and we know sister-in-law, two mates, there's nothing in that.
Not related.
There may be enough in it to disrupt the team a little bit more. So, you know, we're going to have a bumpy ride this afternoon.
Fatsy or mate, who are you looking forward to? England side, a few changes been made.
Well, I like. Have a look at the team. I think Marrow's actually shown up really well the last few weeks and did a bit of a rescue job for England in that second half. Still waiting for, because you can't expect Ben Teo to have any form because he's hardly played this season. But I think he got better and better against South Africa as the game went on, even though the England midfield was really dominated by Diolande and Creel that day. But I do think that I'm really keen to see Ben Teo have a good game because, you know, the better he plays, the more front football England are therefore going to have. And then guys like Joe Thock and a singer can really come into it because he's a beastly athlete. And I think if he can get a decent bit of ball and a little bit of space, he could cause some real damage at this level. And also, we haven't seen Elliot Daly do anything at fullback yet, and we all know he's a hugely gifted player that you definitely want in the team. But it's that argument which is, do we just put our best players on the team and find a position for them, or do we put our best players in each position on the team? And there's a big difference. Owen Farrell is England's most important player, but would you put him at fullback just to get him in the team? You wouldn't. So actually you do have to be in a position in which you are comfortable and in which you can produce repeatedly strong performances and be in the right place. And I think Elliot Daly hasn't shown yet that he is the answer at fullback. Doesn't mean he isn't. He hasn't shown it yet. And I also, a couple of interesting ones. Obviously, Jamie George getting picked ahead of Dylan Hartley is really interesting. It's not a huge surprise. Either of those guys could start. And I think you look at the All Blacks, you know, they've got two or three guys in lots of positions who could comfortably start. You know, you've got Dane Coles on the bench. Wouldn't be surprised if he starts ahead of Taylor and that sort of stuff. So I think that's not as massive as people are making out, except it's the captain who's been left out. But I don't think being a captain means quite as much on the field as people think it does because you've got loads of leaders anyway. The interesting one to me is Ben Moon, just because I really like Ben Moon and really rate Ben Moon as a player. I think he's really good.
What's his nickname?
Piggy. So, don't know, actually. It's got to be Mooney, isn't it?
Son.
But Ben Moon's one of those guys that, and I hope I don't live to regret this, I think you could put him in any game at any level and not see him struggle. I think he's just a super, super competent player. But one of the ones for me is, I've basically listed the whole team, Brad Shields. I've watched every game he's played, and I watched his highlights package from Super Rugby before he came over. Lovely offloads, scoring the odd try, nailing people with big hits. Have not seen that yet for England or Wasps. Hasn't done it yet. That's why. So I'm not saying he's not capable of it. We know he is. He has not done it yet. And for me, it remains a surprise that he's in that team. And I think Eddie Jones may well view him as kind of an updated, you know, younger James Haskell. So good bit of power, reasonable over the ball, good in heavy traffic, decent work rate for a heavy guy, and actually quite a useful bloke to have around. But I just think there are guys that could have more of an impact than that.
Just quickly, Nathan Hughes is fit, isn't he?
Just quickly. You always say that.
I know. But because the stories are so long, we've got to move on and we've got lots of stuff to talk about.
Who cares, mate?
Do you ever change it up and say just slowly?
He's always hurrying me up all the time.
Stop looking at me with those eyes like that when you say it. Mark Wills. Take him off. I do not have sexual relations with that woman.
Shower.
Mark Wilson at number 8. Holding his place. He's had a very decent
campaign.
Is
he another interesting one for you, Flats?
It's an interesting one.
Having named everyone else as the interesting
one. You picked the only player I didn't talk about.
And we do want some questions from you guys in a bit, but just... finish this off.
That sounded like, hey, you guys.
Hey, you guys. From you guys. Hershey bar.
So,
Baby Ruth, actually.
Mark Wilson, it's no real surprise to anyone that watches all the Prem games that he's doing a really good job. He's like Ben Moon in a way, and you could stick him anywhere. You could stick him in the All Black starting team, stick him in the Irish starting team, and he wouldn't look out of place because he's big, powerful, he's very, very fit, he's got a very low error count. Therefore, he makes a really good test player, and that's not a surprise. He doesn't have the impact carrying the ball that Billy Vunipola has, but he has a higher work rate. He's got a bigger engine, and he weighs less. He's a big man, but he weighs less bulky than Billy. He doesn't have, you know, the acceleration that Zach Mercer has, but he, again, probably has a higher work rate and does more damage in close. So better in the tight, better defence, stronger defender, because he's just bigger, more powerful bloke, and slightly different mindset, a less loose player. So... Mark Wilson is the sort of guy that this sounds bizarre, like if he were 2 inches taller, you'd say he's definitely going to go to the World Cup because he could cover more than one position, but he can definitely play in the back row. But then you start looking at guys like Courtney and Marrow, and they can cover back row, second row. And then you start looking at Brad Shields, and he's actually quite tall. So maybe that guy, maybe at a push, he could cover the second row, but Mark Wilson will never move into the second row because he's not tall enough. So I just wonder if there's an injury or two, it might cost him, because if everyone's fit, he's probably not a first choice back row.
Now you understand why I say
just quickly.
Yep. We're gonna get some questions now. Michelle, who's
just quickly,
here,
guys.
What about Tuilagi?
Tuilagi, well,
how good? That's a good story. Just quickly.
Thank you.
I think that's going to be interesting.
Well, we've got a question here that's just been tweeted.
That was
in.
A question. That was a question.
And it says,
is that a question?
I've got. You asked me what about Tuilagi. I've got a really long answer to that.
Yeah.
Should I just take my time on it?
Who?
Tuilagi. You said, what about Tuilagi? I've got a really long answer.
It wasn't a question. It was just a being facetious. It was just a food for thought.
I haven't got an answer anyway. He's really good, hopefully.
I've got a question here. It says, Tom, how do you think Wales are going to get on against South Africa today? Take it really slowly in your answer.
Who's that question from? Is that from Mr. T. Shanklin of Tenby?
It's from, I don't know who, Warren G, it says.
Born and bred in
from
Surrey.
Warren G.
Born and bred in Surrey, and 70 caps for Wales. What a joke.
That's a bit too obvious. It's W. Gatland. I think Wales are going to win today against South Africa. I think we went along to the Welsh camp in the week, and you just got a feeling, didn't you, Flasso? It was just bubbling along really nicely.
No,
they seem to be really well managed. It was really nice that none of the players came up as well and sort of disturbed me while I was eating to say hello. You know, they respected me, which is really good. You look at the team, I think you lose Lee Halfpenny's not playing, which I still can't believe wasn't cited. I think it was Karevi,
yeah.
Charged him down. Liam Williams is at 15, and we saw how devastating he is as an attacker. We saw that with the Lions.
So how are you... Okay. So
I think Wales are going to win.
How does someone, when they leave their feet, change the laws of physics and stop, levitate, and then not collide with someone when they've tried to
charge. Spoken by someone who's been in many disciplinaries over the years.
So the charging a kick down for me is fine, but then you cannot just turn your shoulder and brace yourself to hit a guy that's going to be exposed with your shoulder. Now, if he had charged it down and he'd led with his hands, put his hands up to try and stop, because he knows he's going to hit Lee Halfpenny. So
So human nature is a natural instinct, and it's very difficult to override fight or flight and survival instinct. So when you're midair, I'm actually going to hit. So now your brain will tell you preservation. So what's he supposed to do? Just face it, like just go, yep. Well, I'm going to hit him full frontal face on and smash my jaw to pieces so I don't get yellow carded, or I'm going to be protective of my organs and body, and this is a collision that's going to hurt.
Well, human nature, instinct for me, says, well, I just like the way you chuck those in.
Extra chromosome. Just
make it sound like it's technically correct.
Don't you think?
He's got to have responsibility for the player he's charging the ball down because he knows he's going to hit him. And for me, you can't just turn your shoulder, and it wasn't close to being a charge down either. He's gone for it. He's jumped. He's turned his shoulder. He's cracked Lee Halfpenny straight in the jaw with his shoulder. There's been a massive collision. For me, if you're charging down a kick like that, you have to have your hands up and you have to have... has to be some element of safety for the player you're charging down.
Okay, so the problem you have is that he turned his shoulder. What if he doesn't turn his shoulder and he just...
Then he's not going to hit Lee Halfpenny. He's going to have his hands.
He face butts him and still breaks his jaw. Is that not a card?
That didn't happen, so you can't say that. You know, it's
when it comes to high tackles, this whole thing, Shanks has got ODD, he's got oppositional defiance disorder. He waits for someone else to state there and he just goes against them. I don't know why he does it.
I don't.
He needs to go to dog ball.
Don't think Owen Farrell's was a legal tackle. I thought it was fine. Well, not fine, but it was on the cusp of being legal. Right, questions, Michelle. Let's go. Put your hands up if you'd like a question from Michelle. She will give a kiss to anyone who's going to ask a question.
Oh, she does actually.
Well.
No, she always does that. And they sometimes don't want it, but she does it anyway.
I think we're probably a sign that we've been so informative and complete in our delivery today. There's nothing, no stone left unturned. Yeah. So everyone's just going away with a very good idea about rugby.
You get to a point sometimes when you do stuff like this with microphones. We've got a question at the front here, Mish. Is that when you first start, you think no one asks a question, you're like, oh, God, this is awkward. Or if you tell something you regard as a joke and no one laughs... It's like killer because you feel like a stand-up comedian and no one's laughing.
You guys are used
then
to
you
that.
Do, yeah, you do get to a point where you stop being bothered about that. And then you get to a point, if you're really lucky, that you quite enjoy the awkward bits, even when you're up here. So I was enjoying that until you put your hand up. Anyway, what's your name? Where are you from?
I'm David from London.
Is that mic on?
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
David from London.
David from London?
Hi, David.
Okay, what part of London?
Brixton.
Brixton. Edgy.
Yeah.
I like Brixton. Yeah, when you walked in, I didn't think Brixton, I'll be honest, Chief. I thought Oxfordshire. By way of the Plough Pub.
New Wave Brixton, yeah.
Yeah, New Wave. What do you do, Dave?
I'm an insurance broker.
Are you? Why?
Yeah. So I can pay to come to events like this.
Nice. And and I notice you've got a signet ring on your pinky finger. You are from good stock, aren't you?
Short and wide, we all are. Yeah.
You didn't, with that pinky ring on... You didn't. I like it.
Isn't going on the pod, is it? I'm going to get ruined.
No, of course not. What's your surname, David?
And these guys wonder why no one wants to ask a question.
I know. But with that pinky ring, you did not grow up in Brixton, did you?
I did not.
Where'd you grow up?
Norfolk.
There you go. I wasn't far off, was I? I wasn't far off, are Dave? Anyway. Yeah. What's your question, mate?
Thanks, guys. good luck, by the way. Does Quade Cooper have a place in this Aussie team, do you think?
Does he have a place?
Yeah, should he be in the Aussie team?
No, not at the moment. He's not the best attacking 10 in the country, although we are trying to find one, clearly. But he's gone through a different trajectory in his career at the moment. He's probably appreciating that outside in is not a good position to place to be when you're a test player. So he's re-signed with Melbourne Rebels. I think he's a great skillful player, but again, individual. You know, I always come back to, you know, and the thing I miss most about playing sport is that team environment, putting yourself under extreme pressure and leading the line with a group of blokes you trust. And I think Quade became a little bit untrustworthy in his focus and what he was trying to do off the field rather than on it. But he seems to be much more mature now. Some discussions that I've been lucky enough to have with him in passing, he sounds like he's got his goal set better designed than it was before. You know, all the boxing, Sonny Bill Williams tweeting, all that shit. I think he's boiled that off now and started to concentrate more about being a player for an Australian side in a team and operating inside that team.
Have you seen the little highlights clips of him playing in that? I actually forgot the name of it. It's not NPC. That's New Zealand, isn't it? Mickey Mouse Cup, whatever it is. But he's playing.
NRC.
Unbelievable skills.
It's sick, isn't it, Dave?
It's sickness, sick. Dave. Isn't it?
There we are.
Yeah, isn't it, Dave.
We got any other questions? Yes.
Yeah, we have. There's a question at the bar.
Hi, I'm Terry from Liverpool.
Terry, I tell you what, you do not meet a lot of Terrys anymore. How many people do you reckon how many babies in the UK, male presumably, have been called Terry in the last 12 to 18 months? I reckon it'd be fewer than 100 in the last, don't you reckon?
Yeah, I'd agree.
It's a great name, tell.
Is that a Ralph Lauren top you're wearing? Is that a Ralph Lauren top you're wearing? I can't tell.
From New York.
Teddy.
Terry's chocolate orange, go on.
And it's a name. Terry's a name that really suits the Cockney accent because in your tell. Or are you a Scouser by any chance?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Teddy. It's perfect, isn't it? It's absolutely perfect. So welcome.
Thanks. So you guys, I think, have all been involved with the Barbarians over the years.
Yeah.
Captain.
Captain Robin.
Made that up.
With the issue of player welfare and the amount of games people play, do you think there's a future for it? Is it just a step too far?
So the Barbarians is always the players look forward to it, right? But when they started talking about player welfare, 30 games a year, all that sort of stuff. So the Australian camp, so spring tour, normally that Barbarians test is on after, and you're given the opportunity to play in that match or not. But players are like, we're only playing 30 games a year, and that'll fall outside your quota. You can't play it. And so all of a sudden the players conveniently thought, no, I've got another game in me. You know, I can make myself available. So I absolutely believe that things like the Barbarians, British and Irish Lions, touring groups of players brought together from different regions and different rugby playing nations, I think absolutely there's a place for it. Having played in the Barbarians in 08, when we beat South Africa, they just won the World Cup.
Of course we did.
Yep. You know, boom. Psh. And I'd spent my envelope by Tuesday.
It's a bond we'll always have.
But I definitely think it's got a place. I think it's one of those... the thing about rugby is bottom to top and top to bottom, there's a place for everyone, and women increasingly so now as well. It's the fastest growing sport in the world, women's rugby. So I think that we need eyeballs and money and that commercial model, but we also need that amateurism, which the Barbarians has. Players get together in an environment for a week and they really get back to why they play rugby, which is the enjoyment and camaraderie and mateship and the global aspect of that model. So I'd be really, really disappointed if that didn't have a place in the rugby calendar anymore.
I think as long as the right insurances are in place as well for injury, because that plays a big part as well. You know, it's going to be a tough game whoever you play for the Barbars, but it'd be horrible to see that go because it's still part of history. There's still room for it. You've still got a lot of talent come over. A lot of it is filled up with foreign players now, but you know, we've seen they do have some great results as well, so it's important.
I just think if you ask the players about player welfare, then you know, are they, you know, you ask someone who gets hit high or are you concussed, you want to play on, or kind of it, their opinions respectfully become irrelevant. And we were the same when we were players, because you just want to go and have the best crack and you want to carry on and play on. So you actually, the only opinions that really matter when it comes to player welfare are the medically qualified and the expert. They're the ones that really matter, because players will never take care of themselves because they're maniacs. So by nature, so asking the players if they want the Barbars to continue, they will all say yes, but that's not the point. I think if you ask actual experts, should this still exist, I still think they would say yes. Because although it's an extra game here or there, I think the benefits of something like an experience of the Barbars by a mile outweighs
the potential risk.
It's a life
experience
risk.
As well. And
yeah.
It's not like a hard training week at all. You know, when you're playing internationally, you've got to train so hard all the way. You know, you go out, you train in Hyde Park, and, you know, the forwards, you know, they bloody pushing the line out, jumping the scrums. And then you have, like, club sandwich and chips as a sort of pre-match meal with apple pie for after. So it's a proper social event. And
did you say that on purpose? Like, push in the lineouts? Jump in the scrums? Did you mix that up?
I think that's one of his jokes. I think it's one of his jokes.
Right. It's layered comedy, mate. And have we got any other questions, Michelle?
You've got one there in the Worcester Warriors shirt.
Okay.
No.
Mark from Hereford.
Hello, Mark.
As a long, I know we should be talking international rugby, but as a long-suffering Worcester Warrior, I'm seriously after a bit of advice. I'm thinking of going to get myself a Premiership rugby final ticket after the performance yesterday and getting a nosebleed with where we are in the table. Should I also be booking some rooms for the Premiership final?
Well, you can go to the Premiership final. You won't be watching your team.
Flats. I just want to point out, right, before you rip into him, he's from Hereford. So.
Yep, noted.
Yeah, all right. There's a red dot on you.
Yeah, no problem. I think you're right, sir, and I respect you and I thank you for your contribution. You and your brothers, your comrades, for keeping our country safe. Okay, thank you very much. And Worcester are going to win. They're going to win the World Cup.
And I love your work on the Iranian embassy. So well done.
no chance. By all means, go and have a nice day. I remember. I never know if this is true or not. I've asked a few people that were there at the time. And they've told me it's true. And you shouldn't. He's not here. But Pete Richards, who played scrum half for London Irish, and he went around a couple of different clubs. Dick Best was head coach at London Irish. And Pete Richards was trying to negotiate a new contract, and Dick didn't like speaking to agents. He always wanted to speak to the player first. So evidently Dick got him into the office and said, what are your thoughts for next season, Pete? And he said, well, I'd like to play. He said, how much would you like to play? Whatever reason. How much? I'd like to be involved. How much would you like to be involved next season? He's like, I'd like to be involved in every game. He said, you'd like to be at every game. Yeah, he said, then I suggest you get yourself a fucking season ticket because you will not be getting a contract. I really, really hope that's true. I bet it's not, but it now is.
Lovely question there from Andy McNabb. I think we're going to wrap up for a bit. We're going to stay around for a little bit. So if you do want to have a little chat, feel free. Approach us, no problem. Approach with care with this one. But on behalf of Guinness and the Bear Pub Twickenham, thank you very much for turning up. Enjoy the game.
And Justin. Thank you, Justin. And thank you to all of you.
Thank
Goodbye.
You.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.